This is Mark Robert Halper, and I am listening to Light Source with Intent.
And welcome to episode 48 of Light Source, the official podcast of StudioLighting.net, the website introducing photographers to portrait and studio lighting equipment and techniques. I'm Bill Crawford, publisher.
And I'm Ed Hidden, exclusive photographer and image inspector with iStockPhoto.com. Well, on today's show, we have, I think, another guest that's trying to get the record as the most appearing guest on Light Source. Mark Robert Halper is back again with another one of his photo galleries that we sit and talk about. I really loved hearing what Mark had to say on some of these images, and he just kind of got my mind rattling again with different concepts.
Definitely. We had such a huge response to the last time that we did this. I didn't even think twice when we started talking with Mark about coming back on the show and doing the same thing. So I'm really excited. And actually, after having this conversation with Mark when we recorded this, I'm even more fired up to get it edited and to check it out because I learned a lot.
Yeah, I learned a lot as well. And one of the tricks that Mark talks about in this episode, I took it and started playing with it. And some of my Flickr photos that have showed up lately, I've had a lot of people saying about, ooh, what's that ghostly effect thing going on? And I said, well, you're going to have to wait for the show.
Yeah, he talks about some tricks that add depth to your photo and get people kind of saying, you know, what's there's something about that photo that's really cool, but I don't know what it is. And it's stuff like that that just really makes Mark shine as a photographer.
And you know what? I got to say, since that show, I have kind of been taking that concept that he was talking about, which I'm still going to tease. I'm not going to let it out yet. I'll let it out in the show. I've been taking that concept and playing with it a little bit more and kind of looking at things a little bit differently. And I have some more things that I want to take and expand on that idea. And I'll tell you about them offline, Bill. And
that sounds awesome.
Yeah, we'll sneak it in on the Flickr feed and throw it in, and then we'll see if anybody else has any variations on the theme.
Yeah, and speaking of Flickr, if you guys get the itch to experiment like we did after hearing this episode, don't forget to come back to Flickr and share your photos with the rest of the people in the Light Source Flickr group, because it's always fun to see photographers applying what they've learned on the show.
I think we should dub this MRH style.
MRH, yeah, he'd like that.
The Mark Robert Halper style.
I agree.
Well, actually, before we get in and talking about all the new cameras that are out, one thing I saw on another podcast on Photoshop TV, and this was episode 94. I'm calling this one the Joe McNally style of shooting.
Okay.
I don't know. Did I tell you about this one?
Nope.
Oh, this is really cool. He was saying about camera holding technique, and you can see it demonstrated on the video podcast if you go and watch it at photoshoptv.com. But what's really cool is, now he's left-eyed. And if you don't know which way to test which your dominant eye is, if you look at an object that's about, I don't know, roughly like 20 feet away, and take your thumb, like you're doing like a thumbs up sort of thing, and cover that object with both eyes looking at it, and close one eye. If your thumb appears to jump off of that object, try the other eye. If that object is still covered by your thumb, that's your dominant eye.
All right.
Yeah, so that's a little cool tip to do. If you're not using that eye to look through the viewfinder, you're not using your strongest eye.
It's also a good conversation starter.
Yeah, someone comes up to you and says, what are you doing? You're doing like the old, right. The little Wayne's World camera one, camera two trick.
Exactly.
So once you find out what your dominant eye is, now mine is left as well as Joe's, so this technique tends to work a little bit more suited for us. A friend of mine shoots with his right eye, and I told him about it. It's a little too difficult for him.
Okay.
So what he does to hold his camera even more steady than the traditional elbows at your side and kind of bracing yourself into a tripod,
mm-hmm.
He points his left shoulder towards his subject and takes the left side of the camera and kind of tucks it into his shoulder, kind of like it's the butt of a rifle.
Like a violin almost.
Kind of like a violin. He kind of likens it to like a sharpshooter type thing.
Okay.
Because your shoulder is just muscle. There's no organs underneath it like your lungs or your heart or anything that actually moves. It's just a big muscle that you can brace it against. So he tucks that in there, holds it in there kind of hard, and then takes his left hand around and holds it on the right side of the camera and kind of pulls it into the body a little bit more. So you kind of have like this really strong, almost looks like a sniper the way that you're holding the camera.
Oh, yeah.
And I got curious about it, and I was like, well, I got to try this. I got to see how this works. So I had my 28 to 75 millimeter zoom on, and I put it out to 75 millimeter, and I did it at 1/6 of a second. And I tried it the normal way that I hold the camera, and I got camera shake. And then I held it the McNally method, and it was beautiful.
Really?
Yeah, it's really cool.
That is pretty cool. I'm so, just chuckling to myself trying to picture him experimenting with all these funky camera hold, you know, like positions.
Well, when you've been shooting as long as he has, he was saying in the video, he was saying that he's held it in a helicopter with like a 200 millimeter zoom.
Oh, jeez.
At fairly slow shutter speeds and got no camera shake.
Oh, that's amazing.
When he said that, I was like, I got to try this because there's got to be something to it. I highly recommend to anyone that doesn't quite picture what I'm trying to describe to go over to Photoshop TV and watch that thing, because it is, I think it might change the way that I shoot when I'm not in a studio.
Wow, that's pretty cool, man. You know what would change the way I shoot?
One of the new cameras that are out?
A D300. That's a D300.
Nice segue.
Man, there's some really exciting cameras hitting the streets here this Christmas, aren't there?
Yeah, definitely, for both of the big two manufacturers.
Gotta love capitalism and competition.
Yeah, those two guys are just pushing each other to the limits, it seems.
I remember flipping through like a Nikon product catalog in like, it must have been like mid-90s. And like you get to the very back page and there was like one digital camera and it was, you know, $8,000. And now we have these amazing machines. Like I read about the D300. Nikon finally added the dust shake on their sensor cover and stuff like that. And even a live preview mode for the LCD in the back. And it's a 3-inch high definition LCD. Just awesome.
Oh, and 3 megapixels.
Yes,
frames
well, I
per
forgot
second.
About that. All that for like $1,800 list. I mean, that's insane. Ooh. So cool. So
it is really cool.
Anyway, I guess that other company had some news too. What's the name of that?
Canon?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, that company?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they have the 40D was announced, and I'm not sure if we talked about it, but the 1DS Mark whatever.
Yeah, there's both companies released a new Pro model too, but those are still quite out of my budget. So I didn't like if I read the specs, I just get envy, so I kind of skip over those.
Okay, so we'll stick with the 40D then. All right, so the 40D was the one that was released from Canon, and it looks like that one's probably a replacement for the what was it, the 30D that's out?
I think so.
See, I'm out of touch because I'm for the first time in my in recent years, I'm quite happy with the camera that I'm shooting with.
Yeah, that's always good.
Yeah, so when I am in that position, I try to ignore all of the other right. news that's out there, which is bad for podcasting.
I know the feeling.
So
it's better for your budget, though.
It is much better for my budget if I just ignore what else is out there. You can't get camera envy if you don't know what else doesn't exist.
Good point.
But the 40D is a 10.1. It's APS-C CMOS sensor, 6.5 continuous frames per second. I think there's a max burst of 75 JPEGs. Yeah, imagine that for time-lapse photography.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun.
The AF system does contain the 9 cross-type sensors, which is pretty good. So yeah, it's a looks like a really good camera. $1,300.
Yeah, see that? So that's amazing. I mean, right around $1,500, you'll be able to really get some really great cameras this year. I'm excited.
It seems like the new feature in digital SLRs is live view.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how that kind of works, because the whole point of the single lens reflex being that the mirror flips up out of the way. But I guess if they have the split signal for the light meters and stuff while the mirror's down, I'm sure they could figure out how to do kind of a preview, especially in like a studio setting where there's a chance for the camera to be on a tripod and all that. It'll be cool. We'll have to get our hands on some and check them out.
Yeah, definitely. Or even where else this will be great. And actually, this is something that we were asked to announce on this show if we could. I was watching some of the Chase Jarvis videos again on his blog, and he has one called Point of View Photography. Now, this is something I've been talking about doing a little bit more of, using I have the Bogan Super Clamp, and I never purchased the extended arm for it. Allows you to get the camera off of like my motorcycle handlebar or bicycle frame or things like that. I just never bought that extension to it. Well, after watching Chase's blog, he was showing how he does a lot of point of view photography. He had his photo assistant on a bicycle with a Nikon mounted to the front of it, wirelessly triggered from the chase vehicle. Chase's chase vehicle. Following the trio, the two models on bicycles in front of the assistant with the wide-angle lens with a long shutter, and Chase is in the chase vehicle with Motorola two-way radios directing the models, telling them, all right, hand the water bottle to the other person, you know, look to your left, look to your right, get a little closer, a little farther apart. And the whole time that he's doing this, the camera is being triggered by a pocket wizard in his hand.
That is so cool.
So he's doing these amazing photos, and I was like, you know, this is exactly what I've wanted to do. So I sent him an email, and I said, hey, you know, you've really gotten me inspired by this. You know, I've been talking about doing this just the other week. You know, now you're showing these videos on how you do it. I said, you know, I'm really excited to do this. And I said, is there any chance that I can get that video to keep on my iPod? So he said, well, as luck would have it, he just started putting all of his videos on iTunes that you can subscribe to.
That's excellent.
Yeah, so there, if you go to iTunes, do a search for Chase Jarvis in the podcast section, you can get his videos that are on his blog that are already set to iPod or iPhone format.
There you go. So you heard it here first.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, we got to break the news.
Man, we're going to give people a lot of material to check out this week. They'll be stuck to their iPods.
Well, hopefully the camera news is old news to everybody by right now, so...
But with this Mark Robert Halper episode mixed with Chase Jarvis videos, you're going to need a bigger iPod.
Yeah, or watch this. This is going to be a listen to at your computer type of one, because you're going to be constantly running to the web browser.
That's true. And actually, you know, we looked at so many photos with Mark that we probably should get that rolling so we can squeeze the whole show in around an hour.
And you know what? It's a podcast. If it runs long, let it run long. It's not like we have to fit it in for advertisers.
That's it. Well, it's... Okay, point taken.
Well, on this edition of The Late Source, we have with us one of our favorite repeat guests, and he's back again with us this evening. We have Mark Robert Halper.
Hey.
Hey. Thanks again for coming on the show. I think the last time that we had you on, it was pretty well received, so it looks like we're going to do that again this evening.
Sounds great. I put together a gallery for you. Same address for your gallery as where the final gallery of images will be that we actually decided to talk about. So you'd like to go to studiomark.com/podcastgallery2. And it's the number 2, not the word. Again, studiomark.com/podcastgallery2. And Studio Mark is one word, Mark with a K.
Excellent.
You got that pulled up?
Yes, we do.
We're okay, looking at it on the screen. We may as well start with the first image, since I'm going to guess that you didn't put that in there by mistake. That's probably the first one for a reason.
Entirely random.
Entirely random?
The way in which I
foiled
us. It all got put into one big folder. The order of the gallery is completely random.
Okay. It's a really unique image with a lot of depth and, I think, some kind of crazy lighting going on, so...
Pure desperation.
Pure desperation?
Pure desperation of how I was going to make something interesting and create dimension. This guy had hired me to do some photos for him. He's a DJ, I think. Really nice guy. We did about 6 setups in the day. And this one is something that he was submitting to be used for a small billboard. They didn't end up going with it, but I really liked the shot. One of the things you're going to notice about it is it can be cropped into a horizontal very, very easily.
Yeah,
and I think they're talking about a poster, so I needed something with a lot of flexibility. Now, you're looking at 3 layers. The back layer is a wall that is painted with what's essentially gold paint. It's one of the textured walls in my home. It's got a reflective quality. He's in front of that wall, sitting sideways on a red chair. He's the second layer from the back, and his hand's up on the side of the chair, and you can kind of see that, but a lot of it is obscured. What it's obscured by is the front layer. The front layer is glass. I took wine glasses, martini glasses, water glasses, several different glasses, used my data lights, which are these small, very focusable hot lights, shine them into the glasses, and to the out-of-focus refraction of the light in the glass is what gives you those light bubbles.
That's very cool.
Oh, cool.
Additionally, it distorts him.
Huh.
Lighting on him is also data lights, which, again, a few small focus spotlights hitting him, including one that was very, very bright on what's his left and on the right side of the frame arm. So that's what's glowing over there.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
That's wild.
Now, when you were talking about these as layers, you're talking about them in the layers of the photo, not necessarily like a layer in Photoshop, correct?
No, this is all layers of the photos. There's no Photoshop in this. I mean, I might have done a small skin cleanup or something like that, although I really doubt it. This is what it looked like in camera.
Yeah.
As I was shooting, I played with the glasses because I was holding a lot of them. So one of the variations as I went shot to shot is the way the light actually refracted in the glass in front of the camera. So that changes as I shoot.
That's cool. And so there were three lights then involved, basically?
Well, I would say I was probably using five or six lights.
Okay.
Several on him and several on the lights hitting the glass in front.
So what sort of lens did you use then for this shot?
I'm going to guess it was probably my 100 millimeter lens.
And the glasses were just inches away from the barrel then?
Yeah, the range of anywhere between 6 and 12 inches, probably.
Wow. That turned out really neat.
Yeah, that's really sharp.
All the data lights had to sit inside of my bedroom if they're lighting the glass, because this is a small, I don't know what you'd call it. When you come up my stairs, it's where the bedrooms are all off of. So it's a small hallway, basically, that this was done in.
Very cool.
Oh, that's amazing. It looks like it's such a huge, I don't know, like a restaurant or something like that.
I'm looking at it right now. I would say he was probably no more than a foot or two from the wall at the most. From the camera, 6 or 7 feet. And anything that would be on the right side of the frame, if we had gone any further right, you would see where that wall ends.
Okay.
That's fabulous work. I love that.
Thank you.
Now, how did you handle the white balance in this image?
I probably would have done a gray card just to zero it in and then adjusted it until I liked it.
Okay.
Using tint and not tint very much, mostly color temperature. I'll use tint only on occasion. So I would have been likely to just white balance it and then warm it up some.
Got it. That's a great one.
Thank you.
Cool way to start the show off, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, so everybody knows, the two of you are going to be giving me numbers going between 101 and about 151. When they're looking at the gallery, they will see that the shots all have letters, A, B, C, D, etc. So the numbers we're talking about, people should just realize that the gallery they'll be looking at, they will be in order,
right,
but the numbers won't correspond.
Well, let's go ahead and check out the next one. I actually like that one a lot, too.
Ah, these were done different in time, but they're very much similar images.
I like how bright it is.
This was about 4 months ago. It's a restaurant. It was done for Pontiac. This guy owns a number of restaurants in L.A. He had won a Pontiac Solstice on, I think, Big Brother.
Oh, okay.
Oh, cool.
And this is a restaurant called Ketchup, which is, well, based on the prices, you'd need to be able to afford a lot more than ketchup. But it's got that kind of a theme. I haven't had a chance to eat there. I'm sure the food's great. It's just that kind of place. It had all these great balls and things hanging around, and it was easy to create a composition. And this is another one where I took some glass that was around me, and I put it in front of the camera to distort it, in this case on the left side, because it was just a little too clear and a little bit distracting.
Hmm.
So you can see where it goes in front of the camera, his hand falls out of focus, some of the elements of the background distort, they get somewhat ethereal. Now, I really liked the shot, but it had one problem. The upper right corner was just bare. It was just roof. There was nothing there. So if you look very carefully next to him, all the way in the lower left corner of the frame, you'll see a glass with something red in it. That's a tomato.
Okay.
We took another glass off the table with the tomato in it, and what you see in the upper right-hand corner is a data light hitting the tomato, making it glow.
Wow.
Making the glass glow, placed right in that spot to cover up the fact that there wasn't anything there.
So,
and finish out the composition.
That's awesome.
So that is another tomato in the shot.
All right, so the light is shining kind of through the tomato and the glass together to create...
The light is hitting the tomato. It's glowing because it's glowing red.
That is so cool.
And in the glass, so there's some refraction off the glass. That's what's giving us the white area. The red area is created by the glowing tomato.
That's wonderful. I thought it was another one of those spheres that were up in the air. But
it's,
I mean,
it's meant to look that way. It's meant to mirror that feel because it needed something up there.
Very nice.
The light on him, I want to say it's a combination of natural light. We might have also, we did bounce strobe into the walls. So there's some strobe coming back at him, I want to say, to hit him a little bit more straight on. And we might have reflected light. I'm not quite positive how we lit him. It's fairly basic lighting, so it's not the heart of the shot.
Now, you've got me very interested in these dado lights now already, and so I'm sure some of our listeners will be interested as well. Are they continuous lights then?
Continuous light source. The ones I've got are all 100 watts. They make them in 150s now, too. They are not inexpensive. It's about $650 for one with a set of barn doors. They are very low wattage, very, very efficient, and they will focus down or open up with more range in the Fresnel, and a Fresnel is a focused piece of glass that goes in front of a light, than any other light I've seen. Because they're 100 watts, they don't get that hot. If you take two fists and put them together, they're about that size, maybe a little bit larger. Depends on the size of your fists. I own 6 of these things, and they're just very, very versatile, very useful hot lights. I love them. They make some that plug into ballasts. Think of heads going into a power pack, same idea. And you can adjust the power. The ones I've got, you can't adjust the power, but they plug straight into the wall.
Nice. They seem really handy.
Extraordinarily so.
Do you generally carry tomatoes also?
I haven't started doing that yet, but I keep them at home in the fridge.
I have to throw a couple tomatoes in my pack the next time I head over to the studio.
You got to keep tomatoes with you.
Well, let's try something that seems like it's a little bit different for your style, Mark. Image 108. It's actually a product shot of cell phones.
Those cell phones were done for Sanya. I think they were sitting on the bottom of another ad. I don't recall. I worked with my stylist on this. You were looking at one frame. The only retouching in this frame is the brown one. There was a little bit of a white cube behind it holding it up. We use white glass cubes and other shapes, or I should say sorry, translucent cubes and other shapes to hold things up. It's shot on white plexi, so it's got a very faint shadow. And I want to say I would have probably been using an umbrella through a big translucent panel to light these. And this is one frame.
So it would be an umbrella and a translucent diffusion panel.
Right. The reason you're bouncing into an umbrella and going through the panel is it gives you a soft light source that falls off, as opposed to a softbox, which is just a perfectly even light source. An umbrella, which has that spooky, ugly look. Not that I'm opinionated or anything. So together what you get is a bright, diffuse source that just falls off very slowly. It feels more natural. I prefer it for most things as opposed to the unnaturalness of things like softboxes or umbrellas.
Okay, and the diffusion panel would be placed at, it looks almost maybe like it might be above these or to the left side and somewhat above them?
Let's take, I'd say to the left and above. That sounds about right. It's been at least a year since I shot this.
It's a pretty cool image.
Oh, we should have. Yeah. And you can tell that it's real because if you look in the pink, you will see a reflection of the brown phone.
Mm-hmm.
For the client, we did the shot again without the brown phone. So the client had the pink phone without that reflection. And I think the intent had been not to make that reflection entirely go away, but sandwich those two so the reflection was more minimized.
Gotcha.
Oh, okay.
I like the fact that they interact. It makes it more real that they affect each other in the photo as opposed to three different things being put next to each other, which is never believable.
Okay, so it's a subtle way of making people feel a little more comfortable with it, the fact that they're all together in the shot.
It just feels real.
That's cool.
And I like the fact that this is an in-camera shot. There's very little cleanup that had to be done. These are all held up and composed, And my stylist had a huge part in putting the shot together and making it work. Should probably give her a plug in case anyone out there is looking for a good product, set, or wardrobe stylist. Her name's Danielle Satinover, S-A-T-I-N-O-V-E-R. If you Google Danielle Satinover stylist, you'll have no problem finding her.
Great. We'll put a link in our show notes to her website as well, just in case. You mentioned this being shot on plexiglass. Would it be a product table? Is it curved or is it like a seamless piece of plexiglass?
It would just be probably a 4x8 sheet.
Okay.
I don't own a product table. I don't have the space for it. Wouldn't mind having one, but just don't.
Now, what did you do for the background on lighting this? Did you add anything else in there to blow out that background?
You know, I probably would have lit the plexi from behind somehow to give it a little bit more white.
Got it.
I almost certainly would have done that. Thank you.
That's a very cool image as well.
Well, while we're talking about product images, I know it was your turn, Bill, but I'm going to step on this one here.
No, it's okay.
Image 111.
Oh, I like that one.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out exactly what this thing is.
It's like a dental tool.
I was hoping you guys would pick this one out. It is a dental tool. It's a dental laser. Good call.
Wow. Bill was a periodontist in his previous job.
No.
Now, actually, while we're talking about that, I'm going to pull your attention to another one because it's the same device. 132.
Yeah,
I
was
kind of interesting just to see that gives you a more objective idea of what we're talking about.
Wow.
132, lots of depth of field, very clear to see what it is. Again, very tailored light. But 111, a wider lens, probably my 50, with an extension tube on it, open as far as possible, focus just on that tip, the laser turned on.
Hmm.
I liked the cast of the green and things like that because it's fairly low light on the shot. So that green LED is glowing so bright that it actually casts light onto the piece itself.
Oh, yeah, I see it there on top of the arm of the laser.
A lot of its composition. Now, talking about the two images together, these were lit in the same basic way. And I can't tell you where every light went because it's not that kind of a shot. I'm working in a three-sided cove. Not my studio, friend's studio. Actually, I'm shooting there today and tomorrow in the midst of another reflective object shoot. But these are very reflective surfaces. They're brushed metal. So while you wouldn't see yourself if you looked in it, you certainly see reflections of light and dark things very clearly.
Hmm.
We're using hot lights and a mix of different hot lights, it doesn't much matter what, shined into the cove and into large pieces of foam core that we have in front to create reflection onto the products. For the image with a lot of depth of field, probably shot at F16 for, 15 seconds, that kind of time. So long exposures.
Wow.
It's a completely different approach to lighting. It can only be done with things that don't move. And it's effective when you've got these very reflective surfaces because you need to reflect large areas, and it's got a different kind of quality than trying to use a softbox or use a surface like that, because those tend to stop and start. And when you are shining light into a cove, or psych, same thing. For those people who don't know, think of a white room. You're shooting into a white set. There are walls on both sides, a wall in the back, a wall on the floor, except like a seamless, the walls are curved. So there's no hard edge. And the light can taper off and fall away. And you literally adjust it by just watching it through the camera and moving the lights or having your assistant move the lights. The location of the light is almost irrelevant. It's where the light hits.
Hmm.
That's how both of these were done, with the light shining in different places.
So it was shining into the walls of the cove with some large white reflector boards.
Yeah, mostly into the walls of the cove. There wasn't much going on with the boards.
Got it.
It's into the cove some, and generally from camera you're not getting light. Most of the light hitting, certainly the one with the short depth of field that's more cool, is very, very much behind and or above it.
Okay, so those are continuous lights with any type of modifier on them?
No.
Or just Almost like light painting?
They're hitting the walls. The light source is the walls of the cove is what is lighting the objects. But that light is reflected into these. When you're dealing with silver, you're almost never lighting a reflective object. You can't light something that is reflective. You have to reflect light into it to see it. Hmm. The extreme example is a mirror. Putting light on a mirror does almost nothing. A mirror just sees what it reflects. This is a mirror that has been frosted. That's essentially what reflected metal is. It's a frosted mirror.
Okay,
I see what you're saying now. Yeah, okay.
So you light the walls, and the reflective surface picks up that.
Yeah.
Cool.
So you're not lighting it, you're lighting what's around it.
That's a great lesson. So would you also use, like, subtractive lighting then if you're trying to darken certain areas?
Yeah, I would certainly bring in blackboards to limit that. You need to be very careful because usually when you're lighting that way, what is not lit is fairly dark, especially towards the camera. And when you bring in something black, you are completely blocking it.
Okay.
Sometimes something that is not lit that is white would just work. It's very trial and error, and it's kind of always trial and error. You get a feel for it, and you look, and then you realize you put the light in completely the wrong place, and you move it, and you think it's going to do one thing, and it falls somewhere else, and you go, wow, that looks great, and that's what you do.
Hmm, okay.
In the second shot, the piece there that I'm most proud of is the way the light tapers off on MD.
That is very cool.
And falls away, and that is basically a card that cuts that has light on it, except because it's frosted, it kind of falls away, and you just adjust that card until it's in at the right place. But if you moved your camera even a little bit, it would look totally different because the reflection would change.
Wow.
This will look different from every point of view because it's reflected, as opposed to if it were a solid object, whereas you walk around it, the light on it changes based on your point of view, but the light's still basically the same. With reflected light, the smallest changes can make huge differences.
Seems like quite a mind game.
Yeah, but it's a fun mind game.
Yeah, it does look fun.
I've learned to like it.
Wow.
This actually got me, at least I think these are the images that got me the job I'm doing now, which is big industrial refrigeration type units.
Hmm.
Not quite this clean, but big pieces of kitchen metal, and it's similar problems. And it's been a challenging day, but it's been a really fun day. We were supposed to do 8 shots. We got 12 or 13 done.
That's great. Well, I'm just amazed that that's the same lighting and basic same lighting in both images because they're so dramatically different.
Same approach to the lighting.
Right.
Totally different placement of those lights.
Okay.
Or totally different placement of where the lights are hitting the wall.
Got it.
The first one has got far less in front, more in the back. The second one has got far more in the front. That's a flat surface where it says water lace, and that is reflecting very specifically into a white card so that it's clean. If it were reflecting back in the studio and you didn't have a white card, it wouldn't be a clean enough reflection.
Okay.
You would see stuff. And I think that there's even a glossy surface there, and the glossy surface would pick up things you'd never want to see.
Great work.
Thank you.
But did you want to pick the next one, Bill?
Yeah, let's talk about number 114. It is a gentleman in front of what appears to be
the glass.
Yeah, light-colored glass. Yeah, but it still has a lot of drama.
Okay. This was done for River Source Investments. It was one of 4 images that we did that day. We are in front of a piece of glass that is frosted. Behind that glass is a little restaurant. We're at Disney Hall, which we rented to do the shoot, because they wanted a lot of option and a lot of steel and very office-looking and a lot of dimension, and that's actually a great place to find it. And ironically, less expensive than renting a real office, because real offices are preposterously expensive. I don't know why. So it's very out of focus behind him. What is behind that glass is fairly complex, but the primarily frosted area does a good job of hiding that. We took 2 lights with umbrellas, lit what was inside of that room so it had a glow. I will use umbrellas if you're not going to see the quality of the light. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
I'm lighting a room that I'm going to see through frosted glass. What difference does it make? Light on him, I'm pretty certain it was an umbrella through a white panel. That was pretty simple. Light on him is pretty basic lighting for me.
Okay.
You'll notice that the tie, the shirt, the jacket, the glasses, everything is perfect. Everything was chosen. It's my stylist, Danielle, again. I was insistent on having a non-reflective coating in the glasses. And we did buy these glasses for the shoot.
Oh, really?
The highlight is, I think, a highlight on metal of some kind in the background. I think there was one that I covered up and one that I kept. I don't remember exactly. That's kind of all there was.
That's pretty cool. So the what is causing the patterns on the glass behind him is because you've lit the stuff that's in the room behind there?
Yes. No, well, that's part of the pattern. But the glass had an etch pattern that's horizontal to begin with.
Okay, I see. Great.
So it's, again, multiple layers.
I just like how it's nice and bright and airy, and it almost looks like a window or something, you know, like an outdoor kind of light.
Nothing in here is natural. It's all artificial.
It's very cool.
The background pattern almost reminds me of one of those graphics that you would see behind, like, a news anchor and, like, the title screen or something.
Huh. I can see that.
Yeah,
it's just really, has like a really graphic quality to it that's really sharp.
Mark, how far from the glass do you need the subject to be? Like, were you concerned with having any rim light hitting his shoulders or anything like that? It's a real clean edge.
I don't think there was enough brightness behind there to do that.
Okay. And in the exposure, was that tricky at all because it's like a dark subject on a light background? Or did you just adjust your lights behind there?
You just adjust until you get it the way you want it. They're almost separate elements.
Right.
You get the background right, you get the foreground right.
Okay.
Almost always start with my backgrounds and light forward. Much easier than the other way around.
Start with your backgrounds and then work your way forward.
Subjects are the easy part.
That makes sense.
It does make sense. Well, since we're talking about backgrounds complementing with the subject, let's move up to...
I know where you're going. I think so. Tell me which one.
118?
Yeah. Oh, no, 119, I thought you were going to.
Nope, I tricked you.
You tricked me, okay.
I'm going to pick 119, though.
Oh, there you go. Let's go with 118. 118 is part of a series that I did for City of Hope. These are bone marrow transplant survivors, BMT survivors. Means, generally speaking, they had leukemia. Wow. They transplanted their bone marrow, and they're walking around to talk about it, which is phenomenal.
That is.
It's a hard thing. These were all real people. I had to shoot about 20 of them. And it was a client I knew I was going to lose anyway because all my people had gone. They had a credit with me. So I decided to do the best possible work that I could. And don't ask me how they approved it, but they did.
Nice.
I said, I just want to take the best pictures I can. I want to do work I'm really proud of. I did about 300 pictures a person, which freaked the subjects out.
Wow.
Turn, look left, look right, look up, look down. Get them to do everything possible. Handheld at a 15th of a second, all the way open on my camera. And this is basically bed project lighting. This is Home Depot lights through a silk. To just give me some nice soft light at a 15th of a second. So it's the same technique as the bed project. In terms of the composition, I just keep trying it. I kept trying and trying and trying and trying different things and hoped something would stick. I pulled a few other images from these series. So one of the images that I pulled is number 109, shot exactly the same way. And I also pulled number 127, shot exactly the same way. And the final web gallery, I'm just going to line these all up.
Okay.
And one more, number 142 as well. So these are all the same kind of random, cross your fingers, hope for something good. Take a lot of photos, you know, put your hands on your head, see what happens.
Oh, that's weird.
I really like the movement in there from hand-holding instead of 15th. I like the fact that while they are in focus, they are not sharp.
Yeah.
They're very kinetic and they're very real people.
And it also gives a really neat edge to the actual subject. I mean, I think it works really well in kind of showing like a life to the image.
Thank you, which is what I was after.
Is the background just more silk?
The background is a painted silver background, which tells you I warm these shots a lot.
Right.
That was done by the same person who did the wall we were talking about earlier.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
And the warmth is just warming the overall image.
That's great.
Nothing else.
Those are really neat images.
Thank you.
Well, now that these are done at 1/15th of a second, we can probably guess that you don't drink a lot of coffee.
If you take a close look, these are not that sharp.
but they're in focus, though. I mean, they're great. They're great images.
They're in focus, but they're not sharp. There's a very different out of focusness that you get from something, a motion blur versus actually being out of focus.
Right.
I lost huge numbers of these images to focus because I was shooting all the way open on my 100 f2.2.
Oh, my.
For those people who might not have listened previously and don't know the equipment I use a medium format digital camera, the Hasselblad system, so in the H Hasselblad system. So the lenses are reasonably fast, and all the numbers I'm giving you, 35, I actually have gone to shooting some of my work with an H3D, which is a 39 as opposed to the 16 I use for a lot of my work, and it is a 3x4 format as opposed to the 1:1 format.
Wow. Now, so if that's a 100 millimeter lens, and it's at would you say 2 or so?
2.2.
So that's
2.2 to 2.4, that's as wide as it'll go.
Only like an inch or so, probably, that you're working with.
About.
That's amazing.
Actually, I probably don't even quite have an inch. depending on the distance of these, probably I don't have a full inch.
Wow.
I lose a lot of bad focus.
And that's why you took so many images then for each subject?
Among other reasons.
Well, one of my favorite shots, and I just have to bring it up because it's of one of my recent favorite actors from my favorite show, Battlestar. Image 141 of the actor's name's Mark Shepard.
Actor's name is Mark Shepard.
Named Romo Lampkin on the show.
Right. That's better than I can do. I will tell you, he called me about 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago to tell me that he got picked up as a regular for The Bionic Woman.
Oh, nice.
Which
excellent.
He was very ecstatic about. I shot Mark for SFX. He was one of my very first shoots, probably 5 years ago. And we haven't really stayed in touch, but we've kind of kept the line of communication open. And I saw him on Battlestar, and I thought, I got to give Mark a call and shoot him. So he just came down. We just did this. On the left, that kind of blurry area, that's a glass of some kind. Held in front of the camera. About a 15th of a second. I think I just took the Home Depot lights, the four that I keep on my C-stand, and, I want to say I just shot them through probably a light form panel, put them pretty close.
Okay.
So I had these four bright spots in the light, which breaks it up some. There's a window in my studio. See on the kind of camera right on his forehead?
Mm-hmm.
That would be the window reflecting through. That's why it's blue.
Got it.
Oh, that's cool.
What's behind him is, I believe, an old piece of gold reflective foam core that's really worn, and I might have put a black chiffon in front of it to darken it. And we just did a lot of tight stuff and kept playing about half an hour.
Now, I have a couple questions for you about the diffusion panel mixed with the continuous lights.
Uh-huh.
What effect does it have when you move those continuous lights closer to the diffusion panel, and what effect does it have when you move the diffusion panel closer or further from the subject?
Well, let's see. If you move them too close to the diffusion panel, it might melt them.
Right, because they're...
as you move the lights closer, they become more point sources, or closer to point sources. And these were pretty close. So it's kind of like four overlapping lights, or four bright spots that connect, they don't go dark, so it's four bright spots. If I kept the diffusion panel where it was and moved the lights back, then it would have gotten closer and closer to being a more even, more softbox-like light.
Okay.
So having them close really breaks it up and keeps it more organic.
So looking from his perspective, you would see four large circles which pretty much overlapped each other.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
They overlap each other at four points, and then it gets... How do I explain this? Take four Home Depot lights, put a panel in front of it, and see what it looks like.
Right.
A light with four bright spots. It's the best way to explain it. It's a light with four bright spots that are much brighter than the rest of the light. It's just a very uneven light.
Right, which, as you said, gives it some organic feel. I think that's really cool.
It's much more organic. It's more interesting in the eyes, too.
Now, if you took that entire assembly and moved it back and forth, it would have a similar effect? Or would it change the drama?
Well, as he moves further from the assembly, leaving the assembly alone, that light is going to become more like a single source.
Okay.
And the differences in the light won't matter because the overall size will shrink. So you're not really going to notice the fact that there are four pieces to this. The fact that he's very close to it means that that bright spot in the front is lighting stuff that the bright spot in the back isn't.
So it would probably become a little harder of a shadow edge, and it would become less interesting.
Exactly.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's a perfect way to describe it.
And I also noticed that, I guess it would be his left eye is lit just enough that you can make it out. But you have the drama with the whole shadow on that side of the face. But
it's got a fair amount of light. Your monitor might be a little bit darker.
Yeah, it might be.
But it's very visible. The only thing going near black is his hair and his jacket.
See, now you have me wanting to go buy a bunch of ND filters and cut some weird organic shapes and tape them to the front of my softbox. And overlap them.
Why don't you take off the front of your softbox, hang it by a stand, and just get some of these? Because it's not going to be the same thing as cutting the ND filters. Your ND filters are going to have a hard edge, and there still is a directional quality of the lights coming through the diffusion that is different than making your softbox uneven.
I see what you're saying.
You know, I actually used a softbox recently.
No kidding.
Yeah, I had to light up. It was another shot on white plexi, and I had to put a light underneath the white plexi to make it even.
Ah.
And that was a good use for a softbox.
Okay. Yeah, because I thought you were going to tell Ed to take his softbox off and put it out in the alley or something.
That's where I thought he was going too.
You know what? A softbox might be really cool. What if you used a softbox in your house as a light?
Yo.
Like over the kitchen table or something? Because no one does that in real life.
Yeah, that's true.
So having
you're not talking about photography.
Lighting,
you're saying for normal.
Yeah, just for
life. Yes, using
life.
It as normal lighting could be really cool. And then use more organic sources in your pictures.
That's awesome advice. Man, okay. Can I pick an image now, Ed?
Yeah, I'll be quiet for a little bit.
Okay. I really like the one because I've taken photos of my podcasting microphone.
I knew you were going there.
That are sorry compared to this one here in this gallery. I thought we could touch on this one. It has a lot of different interesting elements. It's number 148 for us, but it's a photo of a microphone hanging inverted.
Oh, wait, let me guess.
God, how many different ways did we bounce and reflect and play with light for this? I will tell you what I can remember. Again, there's some glass in here to break stuff up. See on the left side where it gets kind of diffusion-ish?
Hmm.
And up in the upper right corner? Sorry, on the right side where it gets diffusion-ish, up in the upper left corner, we've got some glass.
Okay.
In front of the camera. Let's say red wine glass, just for the hell of it, but I don't remember which ones. Could have been a water glass. The background is a silver Mylar panel.
Okay.
Reflecting into, there are some different lights that we use from different places. That's cheating, isn't it? I don't remember exactly how we put all the lighting in here. I remember that we used some things that gave it different colors.
Right.
So I think some lights were cooled and maybe some were warmed.
Yeah, the microphone definitely looks warm in the background.
Yeah, that light would have been warmed. This was done for an ad for a guy who does voiceover. And there's a voiceover sheet underneath. It's kind of a pile of those. That big blank area is for him to put text in. So that's why it's a little uninteresting in that area, but it makes it balanced. The text becomes the third compositional element. Camera right, there has got to be a big, soft, warm source coming through. I can tell you how I do it today.
That'll work.
A dado light coming from behind a panel would have done that exactly right. It was probably a round flux fill with a dado light or two hitting, coming from behind it warmed. That feels really right. What's reflecting in there, I would have used some panels, but I would have broken up the way the light hits them so that you get some texture and differentiation in that area.
And those would be with strobes to give them that blue color then?
We did everything with hot lights here, but we had some natural light coming into the room too.
Yeah, got it.
That would have affected some of it. But I think if you warm and cool some of the lights, it will get you to the same effect. I don't think we were using strobes, but maybe we were.
But it's mixed light, so that's where you get the really cool color.
It's very mixed light, yes.
Good stuff.
I
know what it was. You know what we're looking at? We're looking at blue seamless.
Really?
With light on it. Blue seamless with patterns of light. I think that's primarily what we're looking at reflected.
Oh, behind the camera.
Yes, behind the camera. The silver mylar is at a slight angle, so it's not reflecting straight at the camera. It's reflecting slightly to what is to the right, left of the camera.
That is so
And
cool.
There was a big sheet of blue to the left of the camera.
I love how you can see the microphone slightly in the mylar.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
And that gives you the clue as to the angle.
Yep.
That's what tells you it's at a slight angle because there's that slight turn.
Well, speaking of the reflections in the back, right above the stack of notes, kind of to the right side of it, it looks like there's a dark area. Now, is that the camera and yourself in there?
Maybe. Quite probably, yeah.
When you're dealing with a lot of this reflective work, how do you deal with taking yourself out of the shot? And do you become another compositional element that you have to be concerned about styling with what you're wearing color-wise and things like that?
Well, I can generally fire my camera from my computer. I will often sit on the floor, too, or stand off to the side and press the shutter standing behind something. So very often, I'm not behind the camera when these photos are taken. And if I am... Well, if I am, I'll make sure I won't be if it affects the shot.
Right.
And I'll make sure that I'm accounting for whatever the camera is reflecting.
That's great.
You always amaze me, Mark.
Thank you.
Oh, these shows are so fun.
Now I'm
going to have to go take all my wine glasses down into my studio.
I found a vase from IKEA that my fiance bought that I have taken for the studio because there aren't any images with it here. I've only used it once, but I grabbed it. And it gives me the best distortion of any glass I've worked with.
Now your fiance is going to go, where is that glass? I know it.
Yeah.
No, she knows. She's fine with it.
That's great.
Well, let's stick with the same color tones. And I'm going to guess that there's more of this glass distortion in there as well. Image number 126. It's
That one I guessed right when you said the same tones.
Okay.
That is very much outside light. This is done for a private workshop I did for someone. They hired me for a day of private instruction. That's a better way to describe it. We are looking out a pair of French windows or French doors. You can see the lines of the paint. And then whatever's outside, she is lit, camera right, with some kind of a hot light, probably dado lights coming through a panel. I'm almost positive because that's what I would have been demoing. Then we slid some glass in front of the camera again. The out-of-focus background's easy. That's the color of regular light versus the tungsten light she's lit with. There's glass in front, and I'm sure I just threw it on with a dado light.
Oh, okay. There you go.
So the light's hitting it, but what's in front of it itself is blue.
Now,
let's do one more.
What about file 130? I'm curious if that is... It almost looks like nighttime outdoors.
Ah, that's a workshop demo. Okay, this is perfect. We'll do this one last.
Okay.
Because I got to plug my workshops.
Excellent.
I do workshops about 3 times a year. The next one is February 29th to March 2nd. And we know it won't be those dates again for at least 4 years. How many February 29ths do we have? It is a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It is called Photographing People for Publication. You show up on Friday morning at about 9 a.m. at my studio. There are no more than 12 students, and we always fill, so sign up early. And I basically own their ass until about 5 p.m. on Sunday. It is a hard weekend. People work a lot. People also have a really good time. We eat well. You will spend a few dollars to come, but it is really money. I think that's a great investment. In the end, the whole thing is structured, so I charge what I would make for 3 days of shooting, divide it up over 12 people. So to me, that seems like a good balance.
Yeah, sure. Certainly.
And I talk about intent. I go into the basics of lighting. I guide people through the process. I demo a lot of what we're looking at here, or some of what we're looking at here. I go through images and talk about how I did them, although the new rule of thumb is if it's on the podcasts, I don't go into those images because I stick a copy of all the podcasts we did on their CD that everybody gets so that people have some review material, and if they want to know about the other images, they can do it at home.
Excellent.
So it's really great. The last one we had just was late July, so it just ended. The evaluations that came back, they rate me and the workshop 1 to 5, and overall 5s, a few 4.5s, a few 4s. So I thought that was pretty good. Nothing less than a 4.
That is.
That's great.
I think just 1 or 2 4s.
Well, I suspect that if the workshops are as informative at all as our podcasts have been, that it's a very good way to spend your money.
So this is a demo that we did in one of the workshops. You're actually looking at a bar set. At that time, we had access to a prop house we're going to shoot at on Sunday. Now we've been going to an artist loft. Prop house isn't available anymore. There are a lot of dado lights. I'm using all 6 of my dado lights. The light, I want to say, that is hitting her, there's a direct dado light on her. There are a bunch of dado lights spotted in the background. That sign itself, the big red sign, actually lights up. And as we worked the shot, it tended to pick up a lot more scale and size than it really had, because all these spotlights give a feeling of night.
Yeah.
I think it might look accidental, but each light was placed, put light where I wanted, create reflections where I wanted. There's some light bouncing back up at her. I want to say there's a second light under her, too. Just kidding her a little bit, but not too much. But I kept the light on her pretty high, because nighttime lighting either tends to be very high or very low. I didn't feel like lighting her from underneath.
Okay.
But I was after that kind of feel.
Yeah, I actually thought it was a night shot. So that's pretty cool.
Now, with these dado lights that you're using, are they typically... I've always heard of dado lights being used in, like, still life photography. Is that mostly what they're commonly used for?
I think so, but I don't care.
You're talking about the...
I know, we're talking about the guy who doesn't like soft boxes.
Right.
They allow me to control light. I'll use whatever tool I need that gives me the most control is what I use. A lot of the images we're talking about are more complex, and a lot of my more complex images do tend to involve very specifically lit areas, as opposed to broad, big bounce lighting, which I do too.
Right.
But I like a lot of control, and I mean, I don't want to bring out a bunch of really bright lights. People also have a hard time under bright lights. They start sweating, they get uncomfortable, they can't open their eyes. I shoot wide open, I shoot on a tripod, and I lose a lot to motion and blur. That's just part of what I do. So when I do a shot like this, I'll do 10 frames as exactly like this as I can get it to know I've got 2 or 3 that are good.
Okay.
Cool. Definitely makes sense.
Well, we've been through a whole bunch of excellent images, and we've enjoyed ourselves very much again. We want to thank you for coming back on the show, Mark. This has been a great time with you again.
It was a pleasure. Again, anyone who wants to see this gallery while they're listening, studiomark.com/podcastgallery2. I'm sure you'll put a link on your site.
Yep.
If you're interested in the workshop, studiomark.com/workshops, and you can see lots of imagery at plainoldstudiomark.com.
Definitely recommend a visit to each of those links, because, Mark, you've got a real talent, and it's always a pleasure hanging out with you.
Let's do it again soon. Thank you for having me.
Sounds great. Well, that's all we have for this episode of Light Source,
the brightest podcast on the internet.
Be sure to check out the show notes for this episode and all the other Light Source episodes at the website studiolighting.net.
And you can also send us an email comment at studiolighting@gmail.com when you can send us comments, questions, or just images that you'd like us to see.
And if you really want to get involved with some of the other listeners to the show, you can head over to the Light Source Flickr group at www.flickr.com/groups/lightsource. You can post your images and get feedback on your photography, as well as seeing the things that we're taking pictures of.
And as always, if you missed any of these links, our quick outro here, you can find all of that and more at www.studiolighting.net.
Till next time.
Bye-bye.
Check out this show and more great photography podcasts at photocastnetwork.com.